Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as issues of church and state collide here, as New York debates legalizing gay marriage, as we were talking about in our last hour, let's remember that in other parts of the world, like Pakistan, the debate is a much bloodier one. Pakistani journalist Shabana Tasir is in New York speaking in support of religious tolerance in Pakistan, the issue behind the assassination of her father, Punjab Governor Salman Tasir, at the hands of his bodyguard in January. Shabana Tasir joins us now in our studio. Thank you so much for coming in. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
You were educated here in the U.S. by way of background at Smith College. Can you explain Pakistan's blasphemy laws simply to a U.S. audience?
Yes. Pakistan's blasphemy laws were institutionalized by General Zia-ul-Haq, who was one of the most draconian dictators in Pakistan's history. And these laws were put into place in 1986, and they basically outlawed the defamation of religion or saying anything against the Prophet or defiling a Quran or a religious any religious text. And these laws were, you know, the justification is that these laws were put in to protect our religion, but the fact of the matter is that they are being grossly misused, and they're being, they're instruments of repression and terror now.
How are they being misused in that way, and why?
Well, because they're so vague and open-ended, they allow the power-hungry to capitalize on these loopholes in the language, and they're being misused most often to settle personal vendettas or land disputes, and anyone can come and level charges of blasphemy against anyone, and it's the only law in Pakistan where the person who has been accused is not given the chance to prove himself or herself innocent.
Do these laws have a foreign policy side to them? Are they a reaction to foreign intervention in any way, or the result of struggles within factions within Islam?
Well, I think that they certainly gain, they have international justification. The UN, for the past 11 years, they've been passing a defamation of religions resolution, which is, which on the pretext of serving religious minorities in Europe, it's essentially a global blasphemy law. And for the first time in 11 years, this year in Geneva, this resolution was not voted on. And they've changed the language to try to protect not the religion but its followers. So they've tried to outlaw things that they can control and long-term solutions like hate speech and incitement to murder and violence.
So that's an indication that things are going in the right direction?
Yes, I certainly think that my father's death has had global ramifications, but I feel like it has a long way to go before Pakistan learns.
What do you want people to remember about your father?
Well, my father was a meteor of a man, and he consumed himself to light the path for the rest of us, I think. He was a great businessman, and he was a very shrewd politician. But above everything else, he was a humanitarian. And I think that he was martyred for humanity, and that's how everybody should remember him.
Listeners, we can take some phone calls for Shabana Tasir. We have a number of, we know we have lots of Pakistani Americans in our audience. What do you think about the way the two countries deal with situations where religion and politics collide? Or is this an issue from Pakistan that you've been following even while here in the United States? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, or post your comments to our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Your father was a member of the Pakistan People's Party, as was Benazir Bhutto, whose birthday is today, by the way. She followed her father into politics. Do you think you'll do the same?
Never say never. But I do think that politics is a very dirty profession, and there's too much red tape, and it's not always the most effective and efficient way to bring change and to help people, especially in Pakistan. So I think I, for now at least, I prefer to do behind-the-scenes work.
You're a journalist today. You work for Newsweek Pakistan. How much time do you spend there?
At Newsweek?
In Pakistan.
Oh, I live in Pakistan. I live in Lahore.
And so you're just here for now doing a media and speaking tour on this issue?
Yes, I'm going to be traveling to a couple of states in America to speak about what happened and religious extremism in Pakistan.
What would you consider a successful tour in the United States?
I think if I can help to change people's minds and to educate and inform the public about, you know, firstly about these draconian blasphemy laws in Pakistan and about religious extremism, I think that I have an important story to share. And so I think that that would be the most beneficial step. You know, you can never underestimate the importance of debate in society.
What kind of a reaction are you getting or would you expect to get from the Pakistani expatriate communities? As I said, and as I'm sure you know, we have, you know, a large Pakistani community here in New York.
It's always a mixed response. I was in London doing the same thing a couple of weeks ago, and it was really heartening to see how my father's assassination had affected so many people and how many people cared and they knew about him. And, you know, they were just so saddened by what had happened, even though they didn't know him. And then on the other hand, I had a lot of, you know, Islamist apologists who were very hostile towards me because, well, I am talking about things that make people uncomfortable. So it's always a mixed reaction.
So Pakistani listeners, is this a debate in your community? Do you talk over dinner about her father, Salman Taseer? Is the governor of Punjab somebody who you were familiar with when he was alive? What did you think about his assassination? And what would you like to say to or ask his daughter, the journalist Shabana Taseer? 212-433-WNYC, or these blasphemy laws, do you see them differently having moved to the United States, or anything you want to say or ask? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and Asif in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi. I just would like to say thanks to the daughter of Salman Taseer that she's here to address this problem. And I would like to salute Mr. Taseer that he has martyrdom to right and good. And we really, from our heart, thanks to Mr. Taseer, what he have done for the humanity and, you know, raised this this whole problem of blasphemy law. This law should be discontinued from Pakistan.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your kind words.
We all are with you.
Thank you.
Asif, do you think the blasphemy law themselves were what led to the assassination of the governor? I guess we've lost Asif. I'll ask you the same question. How direct was the link?
It was the blasphemy laws that prompted the man to do what he did. In a country like Pakistan, passions run very high. But I think that there's a greater problem at work here, which is that of religious extremism in Pakistan. And with that comes a heightened sense of intolerance where people think that they can take the law into their own hands and kill somebody for not agreeing or liking what they say.
On our comments page, there's a question that says, please explain why lawyers, and this may mean lawmakers, but it says lawyers, threw rose petals on the man who has been charged in the killing of your father.
I wish I could explain that. I wish I could understand that. It was one of the most sickening sights that I ever had to see, because these men don't realize that what my father's assassin did goes against their very profession. He took the law into his own hands. He murdered somebody. And in Pakistan, everything works the opposite way. It took us a month and a half to find a lawyer, a prosecutor, and a judge willing to take our case. But these 200 lawyers and the head of the bar association that they belong to offered my father's murderer pro bono services.
So it was lawyers, not lawmakers. I want to get that comment
It
right.
was lawyers, right. And, it's just disgusting.
NPR's Julie McCarthy did a story today on how dangerous Pakistan is for journalists. Over the last 18 months, at least 16 journalists have been killed there, including most recently Salim Shahzad, who had been reporting on ties between Pakistan's Navy and Al-Qaeda. How worried are you as a journalist, if not as your father's daughter as well?
Well, there's always a risk, especially when you speak about things like extremism and religious intolerance. But, you know, Pakistan's media is actually one of the most free and vibrant medias, I think, that I've seen. I mean, it's sometimes a little too free, and the things that they say and show are obnoxious and sensationalist. But at the same time, you know, you have like you said, 16 journalists have been murdered recently. And so it's, you can say anything and you can talk about anything and you can show anything. But when you start to talk, when you start to take names and talk about specific events, that is when it becomes like a death sentence almost for journalists.
Caller from Neptune, New Jersey. Avais, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I knew her father, and I grew up in and born in Lahore. And politically, I was, I tell you that I was against him. But the stand he took, he was right. I salute him that he was a very courageous man. And he did the right thing. Many people will just, many politicians would just avoid that. But he was, he took the right stand. And unfortunately, he was martyred for that. And I'm glad that his daughter, she's continuing his work. And I totally support her. And I wish that she would be, make some difference. So that's my feeling is.
Avais, what would change that climate, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, the, if many people, like, the, I mean, she is doing the right thing. And many people should wake up after this happened. I mean, I... I'm a doctor, and I go to Pakistan commonly. And whoever I spoke to, people who are against political leaders, against People's Party, and but everybody was unanimous that this thing should stop. This is too much. And the sad thing is that the person who killed Salman Taseer, people cannot just speak against him openly. And he should be given death penalty. Open is that. Well, there is no question about that. But politicians, they're so scared from this terrorist that they cannot speak openly against him. That's very sad. And some people think that he is a, like a, you know, hero, which is very sad. I can tell you that educated people, which whom I met, they are in favor or they totally support what he did, Salman Taseer, and they think that he was a martyr. He took the right stand. But again, there are too many extremities there. And if, as she said, it's a long way to go before we have some, you know, positive change coming in Pakistan. But things hopefully are improving. But again, the speed is very slow.
Avais, thank you very much for your call. On the danger to journalists, the Julie McCarthy report included an interview with a Guardian journalist who had been kidnapped 3 years ago. And when he recently made the story public, he was dragged from his car and beaten. The authorities offered him bodyguards, but he pointed to what happened to your father, and he said that was no protection at all. Do you feel the same way, safer without official protection?
Well, there's a famous Latin saying that says, who will guard the guards? And, you know, I think that if you really want to rid, if Pakistan wants to rid itself of this extremism, they need to root it out from their armed forces and from their mosques. And it's scary because the tentacles of extremist Islam have spread to our armed forces. Many of them are complicit when it comes to terrorist attacks and extrajudicial murders.
What do you think about their role in protecting Osama bin Laden over the years? Do you have an opinion?
I think, you know, like the rest of Pakistan, I was very shocked when that happened because here we, you know, we've been told by our authorities that this man is either dead or if he's not dead, he's in some cave in Afghanistan. And then we find out that he's relaxing with his family in a pretty nice, comfortable house in a garrison city. And there's no way that him and especially his wives and his children could have enjoyed that kind of comfort without there being some kind of complicity. But at the same time, there's no way that America could have found him without some inside intelligence from Pakistan. So this shows that they, our military and our armed forces and our intelligence are very clearly playing a double game.
Just today, I don't know if you saw this on the wires or heard it in the news yet, a general was arrested for ties to militants. And let's see if I can get you a little bit more on who that general is. This just moved a short time ago. And it says, Pakistan's army spokesman says a senior officer serving at army headquarters has been detained for suspected links with a banned militant group. Major General Attar Abbas said Tuesday that Brigadier Ali Khan is being questioned by army authorities over the links. He said Khan was detained recently but did not provide an exact date or specify the banned militant group involved. Is that someone you know or know of?
Yeah, but, you know, I can't say it's shocking, and I wish that this wasn't the case, because I want for everyone in Pakistan to be united to root out these extremists and these terrorists from our soil. But I can't say that I'm surprised, because, like I've said, these people are very much in bed with the extremists.
And in fact, this follows reports that U.S. officials, that Pakistan detained five Pakistanis, including an army major, for helping the CIA carry out the raid that killed bin Laden. The Pakistani army denied that an army major was arrested. But does this sound plausible to you, that the country would actually arrest people for helping in the Get Bin Laden operation?
Well, I think an important distinction should be made in the fact that just because they're arrested doesn't mean that they're being punished. A huge thing happened on our soil, and they need to figure out who was involved and who helped and how. So it doesn't, just because they're arrested doesn't mean that they're being punished.
Imran in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Imran, hello.
Yes, hello, how you doing? I just have like a comment, maybe. Yeah, just a comment. I think if blasphemy law is the law of the land, then you have to respect it. You know, I think the due process should be vigorous. You know, but the law should remain intact. I mean, I believe her father who died, he was a Muslim and she's a Muslim, and you know, we are supposed to hold Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in the highest esteem, and because he's representing God, and once you start disrespecting the law, you know, you'll start disrespecting the Prophet and the Sharia ultimately, and it will just become like a man-made law. So you'll just legislate as you go along and repeal laws as you go along. So the blasphemy law, I think, should be held intact.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's your opinion, but I think that, and that's perfectly fine, but I think that when you get into this business of legislating morality, it's a rather archaic business, and laws are there to protect, not to persecute.
Right,
and what's happening with this blasphemy law is that it's being severely misused. So the problem is not with the blasphemy law. The problem
is... Hang on, let her finish and then you can go. Sure,
the problem is not with the blasphemy law, because there are many blasphemy laws intact in countries all over the world and in Western countries as well. The problem is with the conviction rates. And Pakistan and Saudi Arabia have skyrocketing conviction rates. So there's very clearly something wrong, that this law is being misused. And that is what needs to be revised.
Right. The misuse or the abuse of it. But the law is there. You say, I mean, People's Party ruled Pakistan for twice, and this is the third time. They never repealed the law. The law is still there. In fact, all the prime minister, the president, they all walked away from the law. They said, no, this is fine. This law is good, and we have no problem with the law. However, the due process they're working on, that should be improved so that no abuses take place. For instance, tomorrow, if homosexuality is legalized in New York State, I mean, that will become the law of the land. Gays can get married. Now, if you go against that law, you know, you'll be prosecuted, you know, once it's legislated. So you have to respect that. So it's in Pakistan came into existence for the sake of Islam, based on Islamic ideology, and the Sharia is the law, is supposed to be the law of the land, right? And Prophet Muhammad is the highest example for Muslims all over the world as a moral example. And once people start tearing him down, start tearing the law down, then you know, people will make him into a cartoon, like we see elsewhere this happening. They will lose all respect for God. They will lose all respect for the Prophet and Islam, ultimately. If the law is there and people are happy, majority of the people want that, then that should be the law of the land.
So I'm going to stop you there, because we're running out of time and you've been going on for a while. But, Shabano?
I think the debate needs to be restructured, because it's not a matter of religion only. It's also a matter about humanity. And like I said, this law is being severely misused. So that is what needs to be revisited. That is what my father spoke about, just the misuse of this law.
We're almost out of time. But do you think that there is something fundamentally troublemaking about, as he was describing, Pakistan as a nation state being set up ostensibly for the benefit of a religion?
I think that's a contentious point. Everybody has their own opinion about whether Pakistan was set up on religious grounds or not.
About whether it was set up on religious grounds or
yes,
not?
Yes.
What's your opinion?
I think I won't answer that one today.
That one's too big. I guess you don't have a gay marriage debate going on in Pakistan, do you?
Not yet, no.
We will leave it there. Oh, you're a big user of Twitter. You have 9,000 followers. Twitter is popular in Pakistan. Are you reaching a certain elite or an international audience?
Well, firstly, you know, Twitter is it's internet and it's English. So you severely limit the scope of your audience and your reach already with that. But I think that social media, you know, it's huge. It's becoming huge all over the world. And that's definitely trickling down to Pakistan as well.
And you're making a fine distinction, I think, with the last caller, is blasphemy itself, what's my question? Is the blasphemy law itself not the problem? Is, you know, the law of the land stating that people cannot say things against a religion, is that not in and of itself going to cause trouble? Can you really slice it so fine as to say the problem is the enforcement and the interpretation?
Yes, I think so. And the problem is that it's so vague and open-ended.
Okay. Shirbano Taseer, the daughter of the Pakistani government, Salman Taseer, who was assassinated in January. She is carrying on her father's work to end
the misuse
of Pakistani's blasphemy laws. And she's also a journalist for Newsweek Pakistan. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank
you. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, we will speak to the American conservative journalist Rick Brookhiser from National Review on conservatism in William Buckley's heyday versus now. Stay with us.